We've marched 1,000 miles. Welcome to the latest series of the Women Who Sport podcast. This series is made possible by the support of Boob Armour, who make protective inserts that fit inside a sports bra and protect breast tissue while training or competing. The inserts are lightweight, comfortable and suitable for all sporting activity. Check them out at www.boobarmour.au or through the links on the Women Who Sport social media channels. We're incredibly lucky to be working with a company that are leading the way with the protective equipment offered to female athletes, giving everyone the confidence to participate in sport. So, this is a very exciting week on the Women Who Sport podcast because it's the first time we've ever had a man on the podcast.
On the pod, yes.
So we are joined this week by Kurt, who is a very well-known Malaysian TikToker. He does lots of content about Scotland, about women's sport. He plays for the Glasgow Raptors rugby team, which is an all-inclusive rugby team in Scotland. And I think he's got a really cool story because he like started doing fun TikToks during lockdown, and now he has like over 500,000 followers. He's been a TikTok Women's Six Nations ambassador. He's like got this whole platform and opportunities from just having a cool personality and being himself on social media.
Yeah, and he really boomed last Women's Six Nations and has done a lot for promoting female sport as well, which is amazing. I guess a big reason as to why we've got him on.
Absolutely. Yeah, and another one is we wanted, like, the series is called Big Conversations. Kurt also has seen how the transgender policy in rugby right now, which is banning the participation of trans athletes, is one that we've spoken about a lot at the international level, whereas actually he's seen how it's impacted the game at the community level. And yeah, we said we wanted to have important conversations on this podcast, and I think that absolutely is one.
Definitely. Okay, so before we get started then, highs and lows of the week, what are we thinking?
So, high of the week is twice in the past week, basically, people told me that they listened to our podcast bonds.
Oh my gosh, that's amazing. So, can we out them?
I know. So, when I was at Scotland's historic win over Italy on Saturday, I was in the crowd and somebody was like, oh, hey, like I love your podcast. And their phone screensaver was you and them. I know.
Oh, that's so cute.
So cute. So I thought I'd tell Bonner that on the podcast. No, it was very, very cute. And I'm coaching at the moment the Scotland Future Girls, and one of them was like, this is so weird, because I was just listening to your podcast on the car on the way here. And
I don't know. That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's
so class. Thought it was just our mums listening. So actually our listeners have doubled in the past week.
If we're literally inspiring or making someone smile, then we've done our job.
Yes, that made me very happy. And obviously another high of the week was, well, Scotland being Italy. Good times.
Yeah, yeah. Huge high of the week.
And Scotland actually, I loved, after loads of the girls swapped shirts, the Italians were all in Scotland changing rooms. It's really cool how rugby, you can have that rivalry, but teams can still celebrate together after. I love that.
Oh, definitely. I completely agree. That is the best, one of the best things about the sport, I'd say.
Absolutely. What about you, Bons? What is the high of the week?
So a high of the week, inspired by what you've just said, actually. After the Scotland game, I head along to the Stoop because it was the boys' last home game of the season. There's a bit of a friends and family affair and a few of the lads are leaving. On my way through, there were still fans in one of the, got a little fan area. And a girl who comes, is like an absolute regular supporter for our game, caught me, and her mum comes out as well, and they're like, oh, we've got something to show you. And she's got herself a Scotland jersey with my name on it, and I was honestly like, that never happens, like, oh. I've never experienced that in my life. It was like a real moment of actually, like, in our positions we probably do have an influence on people, and it was just quite like a touching moment. And after a big Scotland win, it was just like, yes, Scotland is on the map.
Oh, that is so cool. I love that. And I think we're two players that have played at a time that, like, not a lot of people were watching women's rugby. Like, I remember my first cap, she'd be like, you can literally name everybody in the crowd. Be like, oh, yeah, there's my mum, your dad, Sarah-Law's mum and dad.
Literally.
Whereas now, yeah, things like that happening is so mind-blowing, and I think it will never not appreciate it.
Exactly.
Oh, so cool, Plow.
Okay, my last one. It is a positive, don't get me wrong. Scotland have sold a record amount of sales. We've got over 3,000 people coming to the Ireland-Scotland game. However, we can do so much better. So this is like a little shout out. Anyone who's listening, anyone who's around Edinburgh, near, get yourselves to the game, because England have got 50,000 people going to the crunch. Wales had about 8,000 people at their game. So we can 100% get a few more people to the Dam House to watch the girls this Saturday.
No, couldn't agree more. The atmosphere last Saturday for Italy was bouncing, and yeah, we definitely want the same this Saturday. And yeah, the crunch, like the advertisement that's happened for that match, it's, there's posters in tubes in London, like it's crazy. And yeah, obviously that turned around in the sales, and we just want the same for women's rugby everywhere. We want everybody to have more supporters, if that's a club or international or whatever level of the game.
Definitely.
Sweet. Those were good ones. Wholesome.
Wholesome.
So, first question, easing you into it. So, who is the first and last person you would allow to have your social media logins?
First and last person I would have. Myself. Like, I'm trying to think who I would actually allow to go on my social media.
Who would be okay with reading your messages?
Reading my messages? No one. They are so bad. Not in a bad way.
Oh, I'm like dirty boy.
No, not from me, but the DMs I get is ridiculous. I don't know if you, as sports superstars as well, like, you do get really bad messages from people who are like, oh, you're so da da da, you're so sexy when you do this. And I literally have people sending me like pictures of things that no one should see. It's like harassment, right? Like digital harassment. So I don't think anyone, in terms of letting anyone see my DMs, I don't think that's a safe space for anyone. Like, even I don't read my own DMs, which is why my message requests is like, it piles up. Yeah, I don't know Instagram, but you've got like message requests where you don't actually have to read it and it just stays in like unread. Yeah, it has to stay that way because there's a lot of explicit things that come into my DMs. But if I would choose one person to run my account, I would say like someone like Lizzo. I would love Lizzo to run it.
That's a good answer.
So good. Do you know what I mean? Like, she just so body positive, like plays the flute randomly, like I don't know, just eats breakfast with ice because she was like, oh, I saw this on TikTok and I want to try it. I think she'll be so fun because I think we're kind of, okay, I'm not comparing myself to Lizzo, but I reckon she would do a good job of like entertaining the UK masses.
Okay, sticking with the social media theme then.
Yeah.
This actually, you might have already answered it, but if you could collab with anyone on TikTok, who would it be?
Oh, Rona and the Whales. Come on. That's an easy question. Are you serious? That's even a question. Honestly, like, it was so much fun because when I started social media, it was, I think you were the first female rugby player like I had seen on social media. It was your little silly dances with I think it was Rowley, I think Chloe Rowley.
Yeah.
You did the little silly dance. We did the little jump to the left, jump to the right thing. I was like, this is so much fun. Yeah, 100%. I think we've said this many times that when I see it in the next game, like, we need to like do a dance or something like that. But
yes,
it's not happened because you've been too busy playing, you know. Very selfish. But yeah, 100%. Rona.
Oh, love that.
Easy question.
Didn't pay Kurt to say that.
So I follow every single one of you from like last year, and every time you post anything, I'm just like. I don't know. I just feel like I know all of you personally, but I don't. If that makes sense.
Fan.
No, but I think we were the same at Canada Sevens. Yeah, we're like, good. Oh my god, there's Samuel Rugby.
Yeah.
She's like, oh, it's so cool to meet you, girls. And it's such a funny one because we like admire you guys as influencers, but then you're excited to meet us as players.
Yeah, I know. Yeah,
that's like double fanning.
Yeah, because Sam's so cool as well. Her content. I mean, I don't know if. I'm sure everyone in the rugby world knows Samla's rugby, right? She does a lot of the explanations and stuff, like explain this in like 60 seconds. And she explains like rugby sevens in 60 seconds and explains like, you know, scrumming in 60 seconds. And she does this little like stick drawing where she draws, and she's making the game so accessible. Like, you know what I mean? Because I don't know, like the home nations, like the SRU and like the Wales Rugby Union and RFU and all that stuff, you know, great content that they produce, but it's like game footage and things like that, like which people love to watch anyway. But if you're not a rugby fan, for people to get interested in rugby is actually really hard. It's like for you to get into American football, it's kind of the same vibe. Like you don't really understand what the rules are. And it's like 50-22. Like I have no idea what that means. Because I've watched the Six Nations over the last 10 years. And unfortunately, I was an English fan at the time. Very much a Scottish fan now at the time. Because I moved to the UK from Malaysia. So I was like, well, I lived in England for 10 years. So I supported England at the time. But I used to go to the pub and watch every single Six Nation match. But I just stood there and be like, okay, cheered when everyone cheered. But for like someone that isn't rugby, you know, you just wear the top and you go watch it and you don't really know what's going on and you just care about the score at the end. You're like, everyone's celebrating, great, but you don't actually understand like what it is. But going to Murrayfield for the first time, like actually, you know, singing the national anthem like in Scotland and things like that, that's when my alliance like completely changed. I'm like, I'm Scottish through and through. Like you do not go to Murrayfield, sing Flower of Scotland and still say you're not a Scottish fan, you know what I mean? Like it's just so incredible.
The video that on those Sam Lock rugby videos, I think it's so true what you said. Like, yeah. I guess you're saying like 50-22 and stuff, it's language that we use without, like, because it's so familiar with us. But actually, you're right. If you don't know rugby, you'd be like, what are they talking
touchdown
about?
It's like, yeah, that's not a touchdown, that's a try. I was like, what, they're trying? It's like, no, it's a try. I was like, trying what? And I just honestly, you should have seen my first rugby session. I literally was like, you are. What's a scrum?
It's a language you just take for granted, isn't it?
100%.
But one that Sam Love Rugby did on explaining Great Britain Sevens, like, I can't describe how much I needed that in my life, especially like a lot of my friends from playing in Bordeaux are French, and they did not understand that. They were like, you're playing for England now. I'm like, no. And as a Scottish person, you know that, like, how...
Yes, I know.
Yeah, you don't want people to think that.
Yeah, you're different. We're different. We're different
nations.
Yeah,
but then they'd be like, but your national anthem's the same as the England one. And you're like, yeah, but...
that is a flaw in the anthem system right now.
I agree, yes.
Yes, no, I love what you're doing for the rugby community, what Sam of Rugby's doing for it. Yeah, which is a reason that we wanted to get you on the podcast to talk about all that. But we are going to look back to your journey. So I kind of know a little bit about this from TikToks. But so you were born and raised in Malaysia.
I was, yes.
First language Malaysian. But then through serving the Royal Air Force, that brought you to the UK and now to Scotland. So can you just tell us a bit about that journey? Because that must have been
shock finding yourself
in Glasgow.
Okay, so left Malaysia at 17 to come here for uni, actually. So I did a degree at University of East Anglia in Norwich. In Norfolk, and then did a PhD in Manchester in computer science. So I went from natural sciences, PhD in computer science education, and then that's when, truth to be told, that we're like, how much can I criticize the government? I don't want a Gary Lineker moment here, but basically they said international students, you don't get the post degree work visa anymore, so you couldn't stay for 2 years after you finish a degree. So I was either continue being a student and do another PhD or another fellowship or leave, right? So I decided the Air Force was a good route to go down. I just went to the Career Center and said, look, I want to stay in this country. Like, what can I do? They're like, oh, you're a Commonwealth citizen. You can apply for the military. So I did it out of a whim. Didn't know what I wanted to do. I just was like, I'll just do whatever. And they're like, oh, well, we've got opening for air traffic control. Little did I know that it was a pinch trade that they're really struggling to hire for at the time. So I just got pushed in, like, oh, as a Commonwealth citizen, that's the only branch you can do. I was like, why can't I be a pilot? I was like, nah, air traffic control is the only route you can go down. So yeah, I did air traffic control for about 5 years.
Hats off to you. Air traffic controllers are different gravy.
Oh, I know, yeah.
It's like mental. Different gravy.
They're like, yeah, I didn't realize how stressful it was until I like did all the training and stuff. And then because I didn't know much about, I didn't think a lot of kids grew up thinking, I want to be an air traffic controller. It's not really a career choice, right? Like in school, I don't think anyone gets told, I want to be an air traffic controller. The only time you hear about air traffic controllers is when pilots blame us for, you know, late flights taking off and stuff. You're like, actually, you were 2 minutes late and therefore you couldn't fly. But that's for another day. But yeah, air traffic control was apparently one of the most stressful jobs in the world. Like, I didn't realize that when I first signed up, but it is, because you also, with the military air traffic controllers, you're also controlling fast jets and stuff, which is mental. But yeah, and you're fighting class jets through like civilian, you know, airspace and things like that. So I think that was a good grounding for me, like for my future careers, I suppose. Like I was so stressed out from air traffic control that everything else is like so easy. It's like on a rugby pitch when like when people are stressing out, you're like, oh my gosh, I don't know what to do with this ball. It's like, honestly, I've landed fast jets before. Like this is not stressful at all. Like, just chill, put the ball down, present it, it's fine. But yeah, so I did that for 5 years and then left to join the corporate world. I went into JP Morgan at the time, was a major incident management, so kind of air traffic control, but for the finance world. And that was during lockdown. And that was the same time as well that I moved to Scotland because I wanted a fresh start.
Were you predominantly based? Like, I guess on the East Coast.
Yeah. So I said East Coast, more Oxfordshire, Southampton. So I was in Southampton for a bit, Oxfordshire. Okay. Yeah, but my favorite tour, I only did 6 months of it, was in Lossiemouth. I don't know if you've been to Lossiemouth, but
no, but it's meant to be beautiful there. Everyone that goes loves it.
Yeah, it's like Elgin Way, and you know, it's like the middle of nowhere, but it was so beautiful. I think that's why I fell in love with Scotland, was the Monroes. Like, you know, I spend pretty much every weekend up in Monroe. Like, I love like the cold water dips and lochs and stuff like that. So decided, yeah, I'm gonna leave, move up to Scotland. And that was like height of pandemic. I moved up to Glasgow in like March 2020. And that's when I started content creating as well. And so that's the start of the journey. And then, yeah, about 12 months ago, I decided to join KPMG. I've pivoted my career again, went from banking and major incident management to sort of tech consultant, whilst also content creating on the side. I actually, funny story, just updated my LinkedIn profile like a week ago, because I've decided recently, I had an epiphany. I was like, why am I doing a job that I know it pays really well, but I'm like, why don't I test the waters and go full-time content creation, right? Or do some sort of like corporate communications kind of job. Because I think if I rang Six Nations now and say, hey, like, have you got a job for me? I think they would bite my hand off like with my following and stuff. So yeah, so you heard it here first. So I changed my TikTok, my LinkedIn profile now. So I'm like functional consultant at KPMG, TikTok creator, RAF veteran. And I'm like, yeah, I need to stop selling myself short, because I think you get a bit of imposter syndrome, don't you? Like, oh, am I actually good enough to make content? Like, all I do is just silly videos, all I do is this, and you don't realize like the impact you actually have on people's lives. And recently I've gone on a journey of like, actually, you know what, this could be a career if I wanted it to be. It's just taking that leap, isn't it?
Yeah,
but yeah, there you go, that's my life story.
No, I love it. And like, one thing I love about, like, we wanted to ask you like how you found living in Scotland, and
yeah,
like another thing I love about your content is just that it's so hard living abroad sometimes, and and all the things that come with it. And I think you're so insightful about, like, you're so open and honest, and I love that.
Yeah, I don't know if you're the same, like, you know, when you go play for France and things like that, like, it's so hard, isn't it, to like try and integrate.
Yeah, and there's so many things that are so hard that like is so hard to explain it. Like, I think you have to go through it to get it. But I think you do. Yeah, that's something I love about your TikTok. Like, yeah, you like, really get an insight into that.
Yeah, my first ever like viral video on TikTok was when I did the slosh. I don't know if you're aware of the slosh. It's like a wedding dance, kind of. It's like a line dance, but the Scottish version. But yeah, apparently like only aunties and like old people. I say old people. The more mature audiences like do and stuff like that. And so that was like in my bedroom, I was just doing silly dances and people were telling me, oh, you need to do the slosh. I was like, okay, cool. It's just like this little steps and stuff like that. And everyone was just loving it. And I was watching, I remember watching Still Game for the first time, because I was literally using TikTok as like a sounding board for people. Like, how do I become more Scottish? Like, show me your ways, because it's the pandemic. I can't go out and make new friends. So you tell me, like, how does a Scottish person become Scottish? Like, what classes you're Scottish? So I was getting all these ideas, like try iron brew, like have tabla. I made like cullen skink. Oh, I was doing everything, anything. Like, my sometimes it makes me a bit like, oh, what was I doing? I was literally trying everything. Or like a tannic tea cake, you know, there's many ways to eat one, and one of them is to smash it on your head and then lick it off and stuff like that. And so I did it because I thought, oh yeah, that's what Scottish people do, and they're like, that's not what we do. I was like, oh god, I got lied to. But yeah, so it's been great. I think I love Scotland. I think I could never leave Scotland. I think the people's been so kind to me, and it's just so amazing, especially in the current climate, again, Gary Lineker vibes, where people are xenophobic, like not just in the UK, but like across the world. There is, I don't know, since I don't know, economically, like, things are not great. And so people then turn their minds like, right, why are we helping other people when we should be helping our own kind of thing, like that kind of mentality. And it's scary, especially COVID time as well, for like Asian hate and things like that also like was on the rise. So when I moved to Scotland, I was along those lines of like, oh my God, like people see me in the streets, like, are they going to scream like, oh, you're the reason that COVID is caused? And I did get that a lot on social media. So it's not been a smooth journey, to be fair. Like I put out really positive content, but at the time during lockdown, there was a lot of comment like, go back to your own country, like, why are you in Scotland? You shouldn't be wearing a kilt. That's like cultural appropriation. And, you know, you're not even Scottish. You don't even sound Scottish and all that stuff. Go home to your own country and all this stuff. And I'm just like, honestly, but you can't really, it's hard, isn't it? Because you can't say like ignore it, because it is hate crime. Like that is a crime, yeah, that you have to report and things like that. The best advice I was given was, you know, you can't control what people think of you, but what you can control is how you react to it. And so I decided to throw shed loads of positivity at it and go, you know what, none of this affects me. And then suddenly it stopped. Like, it's weird, like stoking the fire. A lot of people say, oh, if someone is mean to you, be mean back. And like, you know, you see a lot of people on TikTok like, oh, someone said this mean thing about me, I'm gonna like do a whole video attacking them. And you're like, actually the best thing to do is just not ignore it in a sense, but kind of just not give them the time of day. Yeah. And I don't know if you find that with like women's rugby as well. I'm sure there's loads of parallel where, you know, there's been loads of stuff out there that you get. I mean, I read the comments, right? There's loads of like grassroots clubs out there on TikTok putting themselves out there for women's rugby and the men just coming in. I say men, sorry, that's a sweeping generalization. But the non-women rugby community putting some horrible comments, and you read them and you're like, it's so easy to just say, ignore them, you know, you're great. But at the same time, you kind of have to take action. But yeah, I suppose it's how you react to it. There's no point fighting against, you know, bots that have no profile pictures and things like that. You're fighting a losing battle, which is, yeah, the sad case in this current world. But I think the best way to do it is just don't stop playing rugby, you know, just carry on winning whatever matches you're playing and carry on playing rugby. I think that's the best way to deal with hate, is just continue doing what you're doing, because clearly it's causing a reaction. So keep doing it, because there'll be, for every one person that says bad thing, that's like nine other people saying, oh, you're the role model I've been looking for, because I don't see what you do. I don't know your experience, right? Like, I know you post stuff on social media and like TikTok and stuff, and I know some people, I've seen on other rugby players where people have commented, oh, you're better at dancing than you are at playing rugby, like, you know, you're so muscular, like why are you doing all this and all that stuff. I really hate it. It hurts my soul when I read those comments.
Definitely. And I think as you said, for every negative comment, there's somebody that you've helped or is messaging saying that they love seeing that you go to the gym and it's helped them. And it is just remembering that, like, I think those people are less vocal. Like,
Yeah,
it's the people that are like behind the keyboard saying women's rugby shit, and that you see. Oh. And yeah, it's people that you're like, you've not played international rugby and you've not done that alongside working full time and like all the things that have done. So yeah,
I agree. I would like to see him getting tackled by Sarah, you know what I mean? Like,
yes.
Jesus.
Exactly. Once a collarbone's better.
I know, once a collarbone's better.
It's
not
actually
right now.
Metal now, so.
Oh, yeah. Have you thought you'd like... hard before?
But speaking of like finding a home in Scotland, you're also a player of Glasgow Raptors, the inclusive
team.
Can you explain to the listeners, I guess, and also me, because I actually don't really know fully, what is an inclusive team?
Yeah, so it's a hard language, isn't it? But what I would like to say, it's not, because all rugby clubs is inclusive, right? I think saying it's an inclusive team, they term it, but I think it's more LGBTQ plus focused team is what I would say, or non-mainstream rugby, right? So most people that play at my level are mainly people that come into the sport a bit later. So, you know, I only started playing rugby at 28 years old, because growing up, like, rugby wasn't really a sport for me, or, you know, there's a lot of trauma from secondary school, from, I suppose, the LGBTQ plus community, who, you know, the locker rooms, like, they're very, very intimidating places for LGBTQ plus people, I suppose, where you're just kind of, you know, you don't feel like you belong. And it's improved so much over the years, but the, mm-hmm. there's like homophobic like slurs, language is being thrown around locker rooms like back in the day. And so it wasn't a very inclusive space. So I suppose the currently it's called the IGR, but it's called the International Gay Rugby. But they're rebranding that again because it's not just gay, you know, it's LGBT, it's everyone across the LGBTQ plus community. So the IGR is kind of a community of, like I said, LGBTQ plus focused rugby clubs. I think there's about over 85 clubs now across the world. So like a lot of them based in the UK, a lot of them based in America. And so, yeah, these clubs specifically are targeted, you know, anyone can join and play, but they're specifically targeted for LGBTQ plus communities of the rugby community. And what that does, it creates this space where everyone does feel safe because you're coming in without having to put on the front, you know, like yeah. It's very hard to go into rugby and be like, you know, you go into rugby showers and you still hear people like, oh, the best, the only reason is rugby so you can go watch other men naked in the rugby in the showers and things like that. And it's just when you come to an IGR club, that's like not even a consideration. We have like our own international like competitions and stuff like that. So we got every 2 years we've got like the Bingham Cup, which is Mark Bingham, who was a rugby player who tragically passed away in the 9/11 incident. So they created like a international gay rugby sort of competition that just happened last year over summer in Ottawa in Canada. In Europe, we've got the Union Cup, which is based in Birmingham. So the European clubs all come together and play rugby. And then in America, they've got the North American Cup. So it's kind of like our own Six Nations, but for inclusive rugby.
That's cool. I watched a movie on Amazon and I'm sure they played in the Bingham Cup.
The Steelers, yeah, it would be.
Yeah, the Steelers. Yes. Oh my God, Steelers. So good.
They are the first. So they're in London. So they're the first ever rugby, inclusive rugby club that started. They're the oldest LGBTQ plus, I say, focused rugby club.
Class.
That's really cool. I mean, Rona's got a bit of history with that.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, my own father has competed in the Bingham Cup. He played in Nashville with the Edinburgh Thebans, which was the Edinburgh team. He was just like went back to rugby. I think it was 56 maybe. So yeah, you can't really get a game for a lot of teams, but the Thebans welcomed them with open arms. So inclusive is definitely right. They were also inclusive of old men who were not very good. But yeah, no, like he went, my mum supported them. And as well, the best bit, I need to post the photo when we do this podcast, but there was like the European, what is it? The
Union
IGR.
Cup. The Union Cup is the European one.
Yeah, in Amsterdam. And they did like a gay rugby photo exhibition and featured a photo of my dad.
Oh, wow. That's so awesome.
There was like this 8-foot poster in Amsterdam of my dad.
The boy for gay,
a
rugby.
Gay rugby exhibition.
I love that. When you told me, I was so impressed. Like, I think growing up, I was just like, oh, wait, you play, you know, Glasgow Raptors. I'm like, funny story, my dad like, was like, that's insane. Bring him back. We need him.
Well, and honestly, it was so good for, like, he's like ex-military, like, comes from a small town in Wales, but I think it was proper, like, opened his, I don't know, horizons and his understanding of like the LGBT community. And he's like one of the, he's so good with all that stuff. Like we're often like, oh, it's like a generational thing. Like our parents don't get it because it's not their generation. Whereas I guess thanks to his involvement in Thebans, he totally does get it and like understands inclusive language and stuff, which is, it was so cool to see that.
Yeah. Especially for sport. I mean, I think rugby is like, I think personally like miles ahead of like a sport like football where,
agreed,
a footballer coming out is still front page news, whereas us, we're like, we had Gareth, you know, like we had all the, we've had Nigel Owen, you know, all this stuff. We've had so many role models, especially in like the women's side as well. You know, someone I really look up to is like Jade Conkle, for example, who I think you guys went to her wedding and stuff, right? Like it's just so beautiful. I just love it's so normal in rugby, right? Like, but for some reason, like, can you imagine football having like a gay league? Like, unheard of. And I just love rugby for that. And yeah, so the Glasgow Raptors is the Glasgow version of like the gay team. And it's, I don't know, it's really changed my life. Like, it's just nice to find a bunch of people that you vibe with and play rugby as well. And people might think like, oh, you play gay rugby, you don't actually hit people, you don't actually, it's still rugby. Like, we still hit the same way. We still play the full 80 minutes. We still have the same amount of pitch. Like, sure, the intensity might not be comparison to, you know, mainstream rugby clubs, but we still play. And all the IGR teams down in England, they play against in local leagues. So they actually play in the grassroots rugby leagues. And we don't, because we're still like a development team. I mean, we currently have like 70 members, which is more than some of the mainstream clubs at this moment in time. But we're kind of still developing, because like I said, a lot of our members don't grow up playing rugby. Like, they probably picked up a rugby ball for the first time over summer and they've just carried on playing. But we couldn't compete with like a first team in Scotland, for example.
Yeah. Couldn't compete yet.
Yet, yes. That, yeah, put that in, yet.
With that, we wanted to touch upon, so at the start of the year, policies were put in place basically banning the participation of transgender women from female contact rugby. Yeah. And I think it's something that is kind of been in the media a bit at that, like talking about that international level, and it's, you've kind of seen, or I guess your team has experienced it from that grassroots level. So it would be amazing if you could tell us, I guess, a bit about that side of the argument.
Yeah, 100%. I can't remember which, I think it was Bryony or Poppy Cleal, one of the Cleal sisters, I think, said rugby went from one of the most inclusive sports to one of the least inclusive in 7 votes, because that's how many we lost by. Well, in England, the RFU, 33 were for banning, I say, transgender women playing the sport, and 26 then was for. So it came from World Rugby, right? So it came from World Rugby saying, like, actually, I think it was pressure from things like aquatics and like swimming and track, you know, the Casa Semenya and things like that. They're realizing, they said, actually, we kind of have to take the same approach for rugby, that we've done research. I've still not seen what basis it's on, but they basically said, like, people that were born male, gone through puberty, have an advantage over women, which, you know, scientifically, fair enough. But before it got banned, to play as in the women's team as a transgender woman, you had to go through, I think, 12 months of testosterone reduction and things like that, and like gender reassuring surgery. I have to use my language here carefully, so excuse me if I'm not super clued up. I'm still like learning myself, so I'm going to caveat that with what I'm saying in case it's not the most inclusive language I can use. So I don't want to offend anyone, but this is just my understanding of it, and I'm happy to be educated on it, right? So if anyone's listening to this and go, that's wrong, I'm like, yeah, please tell me, because I want to be educated. I mean, I've educated myself, but it'll be good to hear experiences of people as well. But so anyway, so it was case by case basis at the time in RFU and SRU. It's the same, where your testosterone level had to be like lower than a certain amount for you to be, you know, to qualify as what they would call a woman, to be able to play in a women's game. And the basis, again, that they based that transgender women can play women is because you have a genetic advantage. And also normally, again, generalization, that they're bigger and stronger than, like, you know, females that are born female. And I just think that, I mean, fair enough, I can't comment on other sport, but in rugby, I mean, even in the men's game, the size difference between some of the players, it's insane. I mean, you look at, let's just SRE, for example, right? You've got like Darcy Graham in the wing, and then you've got, I don't know, who's the biggest player in SRU, right?
Well,
I don't know.
God, like, you could go Johan on the other wing.
Yeah. Like Johan van der Merwe, right? And there, and you've got Shu, you know, like Schumann on one side, and you're like, they're pitch against each other. And I think, yeah, I don't get why the case-by-case basis couldn't have worked rather than a blanket ban. And it's right, you go from the most inclusive sport to non-inclusive. And people say, you know, rugby's for all. And that's a slogan for quite a lot of the nations. And we're like, rugby for all, but it's not for all. If you're transgender, you pretty much has no chance to play at an international level. But what they haven't done is given an alternative. So let's say, okay, you can't play international level as a transgender woman. You were born male at birth. What are your options? There are no options. There's no open category. There's nothing. The only thing you can do, I think I was reading the World Rugby website and pretty much said, you cannot play everything except for mixed non-contact rugby. So you can play touch. That's it. And we all know, like,
it's not the same.
It's really not the same. Like, you basically say you cannot play contact sports if you are a transgender female. Regardless of what size you are, regardless of whatever, if you were born male at birth, you can never play the transgender, you know, the women's game. And I just think, what a blanket ban to just isolate an entire community right? And it was just guidance from World Rugby. So our home nations didn't have to agree to it. They obviously put a vote to it. I know France, for a fact, voted unanimously to still allow transgender women to play in the women's game. They're like, yeah, we'll still assess it case-by-case basis. As long as they meet the criteria as a transgender woman, they can continue playing the game. And yeah, so it was very disappointing because with the Glasgow Raptors, the only place transgender rugby players can play is the IGR League, because we don't follow the World Rugby rules. And so I play alongside transgender men, you know, who is female at birth, transgender male. And I mean, that's still allowed, I suppose. But at the same time, you know, it's hard for them to hear those news because they're basically saying, like, you don't belong in rugby. And it's hard to play alongside them when they're some of the best players. I know Seamus won't mind me naming him, but like Seamus is one of the best players. Ask any Glasgow Raptors about Seamus. And he is probably about half my height, but he tackles everyone. Like, he just is insane. And it's like one of the best athletes I know. And just because he wasn't born male doesn't mean he isn't able to play at the level that we play at. You know what I mean? I just feel like that's such a sweeping generalization of a community that means so much to the spectrum of like the rugby players, and to just say, nope, you will never be involved in international rugby. It's just such a mistake on my part. That, again, that's a personal opinion. I don't represent anyone or anything, but I just think, why? What have you got to lose by still assessing it by case-by-case basis?
No, absolutely. And I think it is a topic that is so much more complex than a blanket ban can incorporate. Yeah. And yeah, hopefully as, I guess, more research is done, that's something that we can see a policy that represents the community.
They did say like it's going to get assessed like on a year-to-year basis based on like evidence-based and things like that. But I think because it had happened, I think it's getting more media attention. It's getting the attention it deserves. And I'm hoping that it does go forward in the right direction rather than going backwards, because yeah, it's just rugby's for all, but unless you're transgender. Like, I just think that tagline needs to change, right? You can't say rugby's for all.
No, it's such a minefield of how to navigate through it completely.
No, I think it's really important to have this conversation, just because, as I don't know, it seems like the policies have happened and then I don't know, it's like not one that we have discussed as players, I guess. So no, it's really good to get your insight from that community game and not just that top level that we see, which is can athletes compete here?
Minefield.
Yeah, it's scary, but I'm not afraid to talk about it. Like, well, I would love to be challenged. Like I said, like, this is a learning process for me. I'm just very aware of it because I play alongside transgender players, and some people will just go their entire lives maybe never meeting a transgender person, right, and go, that doesn't affect me, I'm just gonna sit back. And I can compare it to, you know, discovering women's rugby for the first time. If I had gone my life without playing rugby, I would have never known, you know, you existed like in the international stage. I was like, oh, cool. Yeah. But now I actually, much before the women's list, I feel like the women's Six Nations so much more grassrootsy and so much more friendly. Like, you know, after the match in France, where I just stood on the side and just chat to every single one of you, I'm like, that doesn't happen in the men's game. Like, it's weird because it's so big, right? You can't like open up the entire Murrayfield and stuff. But if you go to Dam's Health, I can literally touch you, like, not literally, but you know what I mean? Like, if I went down, not inappropriately, but I could go down and shake your hand and you'll be like, oh yeah, you'll stay for pictures the whole time. Yeah, I feel like you really do appreciate the fans that come and watch.
No, that is very true. That is true. Kind of leads us on to coming back to your content creation. We spoke a bit about it at the start.
Yep.
Now coming back to it, because you pretty much have nearly 500,000 followers on TikTok, which is huge. Like, what was your motivation to begin with, and how has it evolved of you getting into social media? And you kind of mentioned you wanted to maybe actually just go full hog into
it. Like I said, I started because I moved to Scotland and I wanted to be more Scottish. So that was when I was getting feedback of people and like, right, you know, how do I become more Scottish? And I think that was what drove me to start with. I think it was the haters as well. Everyone's like, you'll never be Scottish. You know, you don't sound like us, you don't look like us, you'll never be Scottish. And that driven me to want to be even more Scottish. I was like, I bet you in a year's time, I probably will know more about Scotland than you are. I will probably travel more of Scotland than you ever will. I've probably eaten more Scottish food than you will. So that I was on a mission, right? So my social media was basically a mission to prove people wrong, that actually immigrants can come to this country and make a space for themselves, and I guess it's successful, right? Like, I can't go down the street without being recognized. I'm just like, oh my gosh, you're that Scottish TikToker. And when people say, oh, you're that Scottish TikToker, that makes me go, yeah, I told you I could do it, you know, like 12 months ago. They didn't call me. Obviously, it's Scottish Malaysian still, because I am still Malaysian. And that's the thing, people are like, you're Malaysian, why do you want to be Scottish? I'm like, you can be both. Like,
yeah.
Like, and they're like, but you were not born here. I was like, well, what happens to Scottish people that were born overseas? You're telling me they're not Scottish. It just doesn't.
The You're trying idea to say Doohan's not Scottish?
Yeah, basically. I mean, don't even start. That's another minefield where it's like, yeah, anyway, that's a different discussion. But I love it, though. But that's the point, right? Like, being Scottish isn't just about where you were born, you know. Going back to my content was along those lines of wanting to prove people wrong that, like, you can be Scottish, you can belong here. And so it just grew. So I don't have a niche. Like, I kind of do everything and anything. And so when I started playing rugby, that's when I said it grew legs, because Scottish rugby comments at my video saying, like, oh, because I said, oh, this is the first time Six Nations where I actually understand what's going on. They're like, oh, would you like to change your plans? Instead of going to the pub with your rugby team, do you want to come to Murrayfield? And Six Nations commented as well. I think they jumped on bandwagon and was like, yeah, we need to get him to a game. And so that was when I posted the Murrayfield video, which I pinned on my profile. That's, I think, got about 2 million views. Because again, that's another thing that I've done, something that I think maybe only a small population of Scotland have done, like to actually go to Murrayfield and sing the Flower of Scotland at the top of your lungs. Like, that's a dream come true for a lot of Scottish people. And so for me as an immigrant to go there and do that, I think a lot of people really, really like that, right? They're like, oh, look, he's more and more Scottish. He's becoming more like me. And then when you break it down, you're like, actually, what actually makes you Scottish, right? Like, apart from the blood in your veins, which also bleeds the same with eye bleeds, right? There's no, you know, the genes maybe, but apart from that, like, I probably know more Scottish words than Scottish people do. You know, I can explain what a jobby is. You know, I did that at Jim Hamilton's live, so he was like, what's your favorite Scottish word? I was like, jobby, because you go in a room and that's the first thing you scream apart from bogeys. But if you say the J word, it's quite funny. But yeah, that's the sort of content that people really like watching, and then it just grew from there. And then incredibly, a year after I started my content, it was like the Malaysian people started watching. So people from home, because I then started doing my videos in different languages of describing to Malaysian people what Scotland was like. So not only was I promoting myself to Scotland, I was also promoting Malaysian people to Scotland. I was like, oh, look, like snow. And I was like, this is snow. Like, this is incredible. Like, here, I'll send you some snowballs. And I was like throwing snowballs at my phone. And people in Malaysia absolutely were like, loved it, because a lot of international students come over to Scotland, right? You have a lot of immigrants that want to come around and come here for university and come to work. And so they enjoy watching my videos, because, like, oh, it's almost like a sneak preview of what could be if they move to the UK, kind of like a better life. And seeing me integrate so well, it made them think maybe it wouldn't be so scary to move across, right? So that grew. So then my follower doubled, because I've got Scottish people, I've got Malaysian people, and I've got the rest of the UK. Yeah, but the underlying theme, all of it, is just promoting, like, positivity. Like, that's always been the base of all my content. If you watch every one of my video, I love when people comment like, oh, your video makes me smile. Like, your video got me through lockdown. And those are the comments that make me want to do it even more, because I think the world is a horrible place at the moment, and, you know, everyone's really struggling, but TikTok's just one of those places where you can bring joy. I mean, like, you dancing, you know, on an international stage, kind of doing your little silly dances, you might think this is just a silly little dance, but for some people watching, that's like, that's providing them, like, the serotonin that they need, right? They're like, oh, look, they're just having fun. Maybe I should go out and have fun. So I post videos of me going up Monroe's, because I said, you know, go out, have a bit of nature, go out and enjoy Scotland for what it is. And it just encourages people to go out and enjoy life. I think that's the main thing. And yeah, long term, I think I want to do it. I don't know. I'm undecided whether I want to do it full time, because I'm torn between making it a full time job, because I don't know if I'll enjoy it as much, because I'm going to live paycheck to paycheck thinking, oh, if I don't post enough videos, my content don't hit right, you know, I'm not going to make any money this month. You know, it's not a constant stream of income. So I think I'm undecided, which is why I probably want to go into like corporate communication. So I want to be like, I don't know if you watch Duolingo on like TikTok and stuff. Like, I would love to be like a corporate TikTok, like I want to be like the head of TikTok for, I don't know, EasyJet or something like that, where I can have fun, but also steady income.
Yeah.
That would be ideal.
You would be amazing at that.
Yeah. There's just like the fun stuff, like the silly non-corporate stuff. Like, well, if Six Nations listening to this, you know,
we'll tag them.
You want me, if you're looking for someone to content create me full time, I'm happy to do it. I think it's opened up a lot of doors. Like Amazon Prime Sport reached out and got me to go to a game, Autumn Nations, and just kind of took over the Instagram story and things like that. So people are noticing. TikTok, I think, has been absolutely amazing for the sport, just to open it up to sort of new audiences. And like, I think my favorite clip from your World Cup was when you went against Colombia and you did that. I don't know if you remember the scrums. Yeah. And you pushed them up. That was just incredible. I think that clip went semi-viral because everyone saw it. Right? I was like, oh, just incredible to scrum so hard that you lifted the other pack up.
I like behind the scenes of that clip is, so basically we got the penalty then, but that was actually super illegal. And we shouldn't have got the penalty. Then that clip actually came back round in the changing rooms with refs being like, don't do this. So then it was woohoo, viral clip. But then obviously all the referees.
Not right.
Oops.
With that, and like I guess talking about committing more to social media, the like social media obviously like has brought so many great things to all of our lives, to your life, with like the opportunities that you've had, as you've touched on. But how do you keep kind of that healthy relationship with the platform? Because as we've said, like you can get a lot of really negative comments, but also I know that you posted about your breakup and it got like,
oh yeah, like 2 million views.
Million views, which is like,
that's where the DM started. So don't ever do that.
So don't tell people advice. When that happens.
Don't tell people you're single.
but yeah, I guess, how do you keep that boundary with the platform?
Oh, truthfully told, I don't actually spend time on TikTok. Like I don't actually watch a lot of videos. I maybe like scroll one or two and then it's like I kind of scroll off. Like I produce a lot of content, but I also don't consume a lot of content, right? And I think for me the healthy relationship is kind of finding your niche. I say the niche as in not like what you like, finding what you want to post and what you're good at and continue doing that. I think too many people maybe see other people doing really well with a viral video, like one viral video, let's say. Oh, I've gone to Mariofil. Let's use me example, right? You've seen me go to Mariofil and you try and replicate exactly what I've done and you don't get as many views. And then they'll get disheartened. It's like, but I did exactly what Kurt did and I didn't get the same amount of views. I think a lot of people compare themselves to other people, and which is what social media is really bad for, where you look at influencers and you think, I want their lifestyle. You know, they've got, you know, perfect skin. They've got perfect makeup, and you compare yourself to other people. I think that's where the relationship with social media goes bad, is when you don't have a sense of self-worth or self-identity or the self-confidence to know that you are enough. I think that's when social media is toxic. So I was the same 2 years ago. So I'm talking out of experience, right? 2 years ago, I genuinely didn't think I belong in this country. Like I only been in the country for like 3 months and I was like, everyone's telling me I don't belong here. I'm just going to go back to Malaysia. Like this is terrible. Like moving to Scotland was such a bad idea. That only stopped when I started reading the good comments and going, the 9 people that said I belong here, I'm going to believe the people that say I belong here. And so here's a tip for everyone, right? Just know that you are enough. Whatever you're doing is great. Don't try and change and be something you're not on social media, because that will just, your views will go down because you're not enjoying yourself. You're not actually yourself. I think that's what I take pride in. Like all my videos, if you go back to my first ever video, but it was me flossing at Pride 1 year in my uniform whilst I was in RAF. And that was my first ever video. And that's the vibe I kind of carried on, because that was the first video I posted and I got so much hate for it, because like, you're in uniform, you're a disgrace to the Queen, da 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 da, you shouldn't blah. I was like, it was a Pride parade. It's not like a marching parade. You know, if it was the Queen's Jubilee celebrations, yeah, I would got hanged for it. But like, this was Pride. Like the whole point of it was we engage with the people and show that we're an inclusive organization and stuff like that. But throughout all my videos, like I said, positivity has always been the forefront of it, because that's what I'm good at. That's what I'm very smiley on camera. Like imagine if I start doing get ready with me, this is how I look in the morning, like my content would just tank, because sure, that's really popular with some other people, but that's not what I'm known for. But no, just know that you are enough and just don't compare yourself to other people. I suppose that's where a lot of people are going wrong with social media. You both are probably the same, like having seen all your, you're not scared about posting like, oh, here's me with a broken collarbone, lol, I'm in the hospital. You know what I mean? Like, you're not like filtered. Yeah, and saying like, oh, look, like I have to look pretty when I go on social media. Like, I love rugby for that because it's impossible to get good rugby photos, right? Like,
oh my gosh, agreed. Post-op pics, you look horrendous. You're high. Like, Zabbits. Kind of leads us on then. Our kind of final two bits of the pod is you finish the sentence.
Oh, God.
Okay, okay. We're asking all our guests. It is.
Oh, no.
Success means
confidence. Success means confidence. Confidence, not that people will like me, but confidence that I will be fine if they don't.
Good answer.
Thank you.
Okay, so last little bit, we have five quick questions for you. You just to give us this or that.
Okay.
So number one, tea or coffee?
Tea. Green tea. I'm not allowed caffeine.
Android or iPhone?
I have an Android.
I'm surprised at that one.
I know. I like my Android.
Weight session or conditioning session?
Conditioning. I am a cardio queen. I love weights. I can lift heavy weights, but I can lift weights like cardio.
Nice. Like it. Okay. Yeah. Night in or night out?
Night in. Yeah, I turned 30 in December and I decided I'm a night in person. I used to be a night out and now I'm just like night in. Go to bed, get my 8 hours sleep.
Final question, Libra or Aquarius?
Where'd you get these questions from?
When you answer, you'll find out.
Okay. Libra, because I like equilibrium and...
Oh, everyone sees that!
Basically, I'm a Libra, but it's an Aquarius.
Oh, okay. So that makes just so a much personal more one. Sense. Yeah. I just love equality.
That well-known question, just... Libra and Aquarius.
Yeah. Sorry, Sarah.
No, you're all good.
But no, Kurt, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. It was, so good to chat to you and hear a bit more about your journey.
That was amazing. Thank you so much. That was a good chat. Yeah,
thank you. Cheers. Believe you can be.